I have a newspaper up here in the pulpit. And I have to confess, the headline seems drawn from a far distant age. What it announces seems like something far, far removed from present reality. It's the Boston Globe from Thursday, October 31st, 2013. Tested and triumphant, resurgent Red Sox give battered Boston a world championship. Now, as of this morning, the hometown team, 8-10. Cellar dwellers in the AL East. Itself the bargain basement bin of Major League Baseball this year. I don't want to give up hope, but it seems a bit premature to book the duck boats just yet. However, we have the memory, and we have the story. And it's through memories and stories that we make sense of the present, that we are able to get our bearings as we move into the future. Tested and triumphant was a wonderful way to describe last year's team. Remember, these were the successors to the beer and chicken wings brigade of 2012, one of the all-time worst squads in franchise history. And they went from worst to first. Tested and triumphant, indeed. But this headline spoke to something larger. It spoke to the city of Boston and to all those who love that place, who are connected to it. Boston has experienced its share of challenges over the centuries, from British occupation to the trauma of busing, to a crystal clear September day when two jets took off from Logan and never landed at their intended destination. But the marathon bombings of April 15th, 2013 disturbed us in a new way. Perhaps it's because the marathon symbolizes everything that is good about humanity. People competing for all of the right and most noble reasons. People from all walks of life, from all around the world, coming together to celebrate. And into this wonderful day intruded darkness and hatred and nihilistic violence. We remember the response with wonder and gratitude of police officers and firefighters and spectators and runners heading to the explosions. People rushing to help those who had been injured. We remember that on that day, three people were killed, hundreds injured, and in the days that followed, another person died. We remember the darkness, but we also remember the response. And we recognize in it resurrection. A resurrection that began on April 15th of last year and continues to this day. But tested and triumphant is not just a headline, nor is it a way to describe a city. It is also the theme of the gospel, and it is the motif of the resurrection story. Consider the two Marys. Consider these two women and how they have been tested. They chose to follow this new preacher, this uncredentialed teacher, this man who seemed to pick fights with the authorities, who had no respect for convention. They endured the eye-rolling and derision of friends and family. They were with him when the crowds thronged about him, and they were with him when everyone had fled. They were there at the foot of the cross, in the wake of Jesus' execution. They went to his tomb, seeking what? Comfort? Consolation? Connection with something tangible? Something they could hold on to? They went, we can presume, with a maelstrom of feelings, of loss and anger and grief and confusion. These women had seen their friend and teacher crucified. They must have been traumatized. And what do they find when they arrive at the tomb? Soldiers. Legionaries. Imagine going to the grave of one of your loved ones and finding U.S. Marines standing guard. This was Rome's A-team. But that's just the start of what these women encountered. An earthquake struck. Anybody who has ever been through one, whether it is just a tremor or one of those epic West Coast strikes, knows how disorienting and disconcerting a quake can be. Things begin to rattle and shake. The earth can begin to undulate. And as suddenly as it starts, it stops. But this wasn't any run-of-the-mill seismic occurrence, was it? No, this earthquake took place because an angel had arrived. And this, of course, is not one of those cute little pudgy cherub angels. One you want to grab its little cheek and pinch. No, this is a messenger of the Lord, as bright as lightning. His clothes a dazzling white. He's perched atop the boulder that he has moved aside. And he says to these women, "Do not be afraid." Good heavens! Being afraid is the only rational response. This is the holy made manifest. Come to talk to them. Of course they're going to be afraid. But they're also engaged. They listen. The angel tells them he knows why they're there. I know you're here for Jesus, but he has been raised. Go tell the disciples, head to said Galilee. And what do? They run off to find the disciples. Through everything that has happened, their faith has endured. Their faith is sustained. Their faith drives them forward. They are tested and triumphant. And what of Jesus? Well, he's been tested. Right from the beginning of his ministry, when Satan tempts him in the desert, over the years, as he contends with Pharisees and others who are threatened by him, suspicious of his motives, to just a few days earlier, as he arrives at Jerusalem and the crowd sing his praises and they seek to seduce him with political power. Tested in the court of Pilate, where he refuses to be baited or goaded, and Jesus is able to hold true to what he has taught. Tested on the cross, where he shows magnanimity to a criminal and understanding to his tormentors. Oh yes, Jesus has been tested, and now he has been crucified, has died, and been buried. By the standards of this world, Jesus has been tested and he has failed spectacularly. But the world doesn't have the final word, does it? That belongs to God. Jesus has been resurrected. Jesus appears to those two women. Don't be afraid, he says. Go find my brothers. Tell them to come meet me in Galilee. Jesus is triumphant. What does he do in his victory? The Son of God, the risen Lord. What does he do? He continues to upturn and overthrow expectations and conventions. He's not going to use all of this divine power to take over the world. No. The first thing he does is find two friends who are mourning and offers them comfort. And they respond, throwing themselves at him, worshiping him, loving him, connecting with him, having their needs met and fulfilled. Think about who is present at the tomb. We've got some soldiers and the two women. By the standards of that day and place, and let us be honest, in many places today, people would see these figures and presume that the soldiers would be brave and true and strong and stand fast, and that the women would lose their heads and run off shrieking. Well, what happens here? The big tough legionaries swoon, and the women stand tall, stand fast, receive the word. Jesus doesn't give the good news to the representatives of established authority. He shares it with people who have no standing in society. And the message he shares, if you listen carefully, you notice the angel told the Marys to go tell the disciples. Jesus calls them brothers. And in that word, he signals his forgiveness. He isn't going to worry about the fact that Peter and the others abandoned him and fled. No. Instead, he is going to come to them and he is going to entrust them with the mission of sharing the good news of God's love. This is Jesus triumphant. Now, different preachers can find themselves prey to the temptation to use different kinds of analogies. Now, I will confess I have a fondness for those that come from the world of sports. But sometimes they are especially appropriate. And I believe that is the case today. Consider the World Series. The pinnacle of achievement. A team works hard throughout the year, through the regular season, fights its way through the playoffs, and then prevails in the best of seven to win the world championship. And once they have done this, what happens? They have a parade? Maybe they go to the White House and they have their picture taken? And then they start playing more games. The World Series has been won. A chapter has been concluded. A new season, a new chapter begins to be written right after. The resurrection in the story of our faith is the winning of the World Series. But it's not the end of the story. There are more games to be played, maybe seen in a different light. Red Sox fans understand this when they think back to 2003. It was all different after we'd finally won after all those decades. But there was more ball to be played. The game has gone on now for 2,000 years. We read of it in Acts and in Paul. We encounter it through the evangelists, in the history of the early church, in the witness and lives of saints down the ages, people who are famous and obscure, people who have been tested and triumphant. We continue to play today. Sometimes we will hit home runs. Other times we will strike out. Sometimes, by God's grace, we'll get a ball. Other times we'll be beamed by the pitcher. We may not like the umpire's call, but we'll keep playing. We will be tested, not in the way we were when we were at school and had to complete an exam, but we will be tested by circumstance and opportunity and challenge and possibility. And by the grace of God, and with the example of Jesus Christ, and in the embrace of the Holy Spirit, we too can be triumphant. Not for our own glory, not for our own sake, but for that of Jesus Christ, our risen Lord.